In order to understand if something is a mistake, if it's fraud, right? Is it a did the platform make an error, right? Does Google owe you money? Does the Trade Desk owe you money, right? Does a was there an actual mistake in how something was run in the technology you're using, right? You need to be able to see how were the campaigns configured, how were the insertion orders configured, the line items, what targeting was in place, what impressions were actually served. You need to have the layer, as Augustine Fu points out, right? The verification, third-party verification tools, they're kind of woefully skilled at like for impressions that they actually can measure, they're pretty good, but there's a heck of a lot of impression data that they're not even able to do the appropriate level of forensics on. So you have to be able to see that log level data. You have to be able to, if you want to apply a solution like Foo Analytics, so tagging to your media to do your own kind of level of fraudulent analysis, you should have the right to do that. Build that into your contract. Get ready to deep dive into the world of digital transformation, where we explore the latest trends, innovations, and challenges shaking up industries. Join us as we decode the secrets behind successful digital strategies and hear from experts who are at the forefront of disrupting the status quo. In each episode, we'll unravel the mysteries of the digital realm and uncover the hidden opportunities that lie within. From artificial intelligence to blockchain, from automation to cybersecurity, we'll leave no digital stone unturned. But hold on tight, because this podcast isn't your average tech talk. We're injecting a hefty dose of wit and humor into every episode, making learning about digital transformation an absolute blast. So if you're ready to embrace the digital revolution with a smile on your face, tune in to the Digital Disruption Podcast and get ready to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Don't miss out on the fun. Subscribe now and join us on this wild digital journey. We are
All right.
recording.
We are recording. Hello, Patrick. Good morning.
Hey, good evening, Daoud. How are you doing?
I'm doing all good. Just wanted to ask, how's Jenny?
How's what?
How's Jenny?
I don't
You know,
know.
we always have a Jenny that we always like assign tasks for, which she is not qualified to do, and then tasks blow up on our faces, and we think, huh, why? Why did this task blow up? Because like this is what happens in media. Like you assign people who have no idea what they're doing. I was gonna say something much different, but this is a family-friendly podcast. We assign people who understand nothing about what they're doing, and then we at the end of the day ask, well, what's the ROI? But the thing is, I mean, not to the fault of Jenny, she's poor, poor lady, but garbage in, garbage out.
It's a really good point. We oftentimes that happens, and usually management is to blame. If you
Please, if your wife listens to this podcast, just make her listen to the whole bit, not just how's Jenny and then the closes the episode. I want you alive.
No, I think you bet you're right. When you pick, if you sort of pick somebody at random and assign them a task, or even if you give somebody a task because you don't want to do it and you haven't taken the time to know, do they have the skills, the experience, the expertise? It's really not fair. It's not fair to yourself. For one thing, you wanted a result, you wanted an outcome. So you're not being fair to the person you're asking to do it, and you're also not being fair to yourself. So there are scenarios where you can, if everybody's fully aware. I know, for example, a conversation we might have is, Jenny, I know you've never done this before, and I know you don't know how to do it. There are some tutorials and classes available. We'd like to get your skills better, so let's do that. And then we want you to run some campaigns with a small amount of dollars. Until you have the expertise needed to actually do programmatic media buying or social paid social media buying. And in the meantime, then we're going to let somebody more senior who actually has done this before kind of run the real budgets. So there are some ways to do that responsibly to kind of get people's skills where they need to be. But just throwing people into the deep end and expecting good results is not one of them.
Yeah, no, I mean, let's give Jenny the couple of million and let her run through with it. Come on, you know?
Yeah, and just so we're inclusive here, if we did the same thing to Joe, he would probably be in equally bad straits.
Wise choice of names.
but yeah, no, you bring up a really good point. I think one of the reasons many companies to get to a certain size, why they use either freelance paid media help or agency paid media help is, precisely because they don't have that level of expertise and skills in-house. And they may not have the infrastructure and processes. And, quite frankly, some of the economies of scale that large agencies have. So there are some very good reasons why, everything from, kind of mid-market companies to the largest Fortune 100 enterprises, why they use agency partners. There is a, there's a very good reason for that. One of them is the skills and expertise. Another is the processes. That said, the programmatic space has a huge, I mean, programmatic space in particular, and I guess paid media more broadly, has a huge number of pitfalls. The most, I guess, notable being the more you scale and automate things, the more you create scenarios for waste, not only just flat out waste, but just nefarious forms of fraud. If there's advertising revenue to be made, there's no shortage of people who would like to separate you from your advertising dollars without doing any actual work, on your behalf as a brand, right? So the amount of ad fraud through bot networks and every manner of nefarious forms of deception, that's a huge issue. And within programmatic, it's much more amplified than in other forms of paid media. And then again, like I said, there's just this kind of waste that goes along with there's a kind of form of ad inventory. So let's just call it what it is. We don't sugarcoat here. What's usually referred to with the acronym MFA, made for advertising content, right? It's legal and it's legitimate. It's within advertising policies, but it's about as close to
The
outright
gray
fraud
line.
as you can be without being fraudulent, right? And the only reason people buy it for the most part is laziness and complacency. Like people haven't taken the, and this is where the skills, so just having the experience of knowing that you should be looking at the inventory sources where your advertising is showing up, that knowing that you can actually create both whitelists and blacklists for where your advertising shows up, right? Like, these are not super difficult from a technical standpoint, but you kind of have to go through those processes, put those things in place, in order to like manage those kind of things. So, again, these are not things you necessarily intuitively know, but they're not difficult once you grasp them, right? So they come down to mostly once you know about them, it comes down to having processes in place and following those processes. When you set up campaigns, when when you're creating, like let's say you're using a platform like DV360, right? When you're creating the campaigns and the underlying insertion orders and line items, it's applying the appropriate settings. And then as you scale that, having management processes in place that allow you to scale efficiently, right? Which is, are you using tools? Are you using APIs? Are you using structured data files, right? Are you using build sheets so you can, either fully automate or partially automate large components of this, right? And the worst thing you want to do is have mistakes. So it's one thing if you make a mistake with a $2,500 test budget, right? That goes, something goes wrong and all of your impressions were on Candy Crush. Okay, fine. Like it was $2,500, not ideal, but not catastrophic. Now, if you take little mistakes, a number of them, and now you have them in build sheets, and now you have, now you start adding orders of magnitude. Now we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, a quarter of $1 million. If you now amplify those mistakes or things
It
you just
falls like a
forgot to
house of
do,
cards.
yeah. So now you have really bad inventory propagated through every campaign, every line, down to the line item level because you didn't like follow a rigorous process. So now here's the question though, right? Is do agencies do this perfectly? And no, they don't. Do they probably do it better than an inexperienced marketer? Absolutely, in most cases. Because you're working with a really expensive agency, does that mean you're getting senior paid media talent? Not always. You oftentimes have an account team that may be supervised by somebody with a fair amount of experience, but the people doing the delivery are fairly junior. They do have a lot better data pipelines in place. In a lot of cases, they do have typically more rigorous practices around whitelisting, blacklisting, audience targeting settings, creative optimization, et cetera, right? But there's a really dangerous, I guess, tendency to think you can like optimize through the garbage. So you kind of get your creative in place, get an audience in place, set some parameters around geos and maybe some intent-based audience, whatever, right? Get some targeting in place, and then set a target for a cost per lead or a cost per conversion or whatever the success metric is that you're trying to optimize to. And then to think that the platform is going to take a bunch of suboptimal assets and settings and actually create performance out of that. And sadly or rightly, sometimes it does, right? So it kind of lulls people into a sense of complacency. But think how much further your ad dollars would go. Think how much less waste you would have if you actually both take advantage of the automated optimization available and follow best practices throughout the campaign setup and lifecycle, right? So that's the ideal scenario, right? Not making mistakes and putting garbage into the system and then having the algorithms sort of try to, filter through that. I don't think that's the best practice. And in-house marketing teams do this, and sadly, agency teams sometimes do this as well. And it's, partially the effort to bring the cost of delivery down, right? If it takes an agency less time and effort to service your account, then that's money in their pocket, right? And similarly, if your internal teams are really taxed with delivering a lot of different campaigns through different channels, Jenny and Joe, you've really spread them thin. Some of the things they're good at, some of the things they're just learning, right? So they're going to take advantage of as much automation as possible. And if any less than optimal practices slip in there, then the automation and as you automate more and scale it more, a lot of those problems propagate and become worse. All right, that's a mouthful. What are some of the things? Well, I guess let's pause there for a second. Anything I'd say that I said does not ring true, or you want to challenge, or want me to amp, or that you think we should linger on a little bit before
No, I
we.
think that's fine. I guess the next point where you were heading is the question I was going to ask. How can you protect yourself from this scamming, or like being lured into a full sense of security by your partner, by your employees, by the agency that you're going to be working with? How do you, because like a throwback to the ROI episode, it follows the same pattern. Like, yes, we're going to be doing some work. Well, ROI, that's interesting. I don't think I can show you ROI, you know?
Yeah,
So,
ROI is an interesting one. Obviously, measurement is really critical to having reasonable reporting and analysis around. I mean, let's start with just simple like ROAS, return on ad spend, right? You need to have a certain kind of measurement amount of measurement in place for your paid media and other channels as well, if you want to have some idea what the return on ad spend is. It's much easier to do that on click-based attribution than it is on view-based, but it is still at this point possible to do it on views as well. It's going to become increasingly challenging, but can be done. Certainly having to layer in some if companies that are not already doing some form of kind of aggregate statistics-based kind of data science approach to media performance, using media mix modeling and marketing mix modeling, that they're going to need to start doing that if they aren't already, if you want to have a kind of a more holistic picture of media performance. So measurement is key for one thing, regardless of whether you're working with a in-house team or an agency partner. But transparent, a certain level of transparency is also needed. It seemed like around like between about 2016 and 2020, 2021, there was like this big push. Everybody gets enraged about something from time to time, and in that time period, it seemed like everybody was, up in arms about agent, transparency with agencies and things. Rightly so, but of course, things happen, people move on to other things to be enraged about. And the heyday of transparency outrage waned for a bit, but the problem is ad fraud and garbage programmatic inventory and all the things that kind of led, and some of the not so savory agency practices, all those things sort of continued. It's just people's attention moved on to other things to get mad about for a while. But if you kind of look back at what some of those frameworks that were created, say by the ANA, and by there's a few individuals in the industry. I'll name one that I really like, who I really like is Augustine Foo, Foo Analytics. He does a lot of ad fraud analytics and reporting, and he's very vocal. He writes about it a lot. He's very much at the forefront that this should be a problem that we solve for both the ethical and economic reasons involved. So all of those problems have perpetuated. And one of the big things that during that sort of 2016 to 2021 timeframe, a lot of people were trying to create these, transparency frameworks. And conceptually, they're all really good ideas. So like when you negotiate contracts with any partner, right? What do you think happens typically? If I say I want to do business with you've given me a price as the vendor, what's your sales team probably going to do? They're going to send me a contract, right? On their paperwork with the contract exactly the way they want it worded, right? And they're going to hope that you read through it and the terms are acceptable, because it's not like the price is what you agreed on and the deliverable is what you agreed on. But as long as the MSAs are not like too onerous, right? And the terms and conditions aren't like ridiculous, like they hope you just sign it, right? And then you guys are off to the races. But digital maturity, we've talked about this before. One of the four pillars is your processes. One of the other pillars is your people, which is like the roles and the skills you have in your team. So we said earlier, one of the reasons why you often bring in a partner, an agency, vendor of any kind is because they have a level of expertise and experience you may not have on your team. And they may also have some infrastructure and things that you want to take advantage of. They can bring value to you, right? But then there's the other component, your processes. Your procurement is part of your process. You're with absolutely within your rights, and really good procurement teams already do this. So I'm preaching to the choir for some organizations, but like not only can you negotiate price, right? You can also negotiate transparency. So there's no reason you cannot have your own templates for working with agencies and vendors, freelancers that build transparency into the contract, accountability into the contract, right? So the right to audit, the right to see log level media data, the right to see if the agency is receiving any kickbacks, incentives, value add free ad inventory that they're, are they, if there's value add inventory, are you getting it as a value add or are they charging you for it, right? Understanding the economics of your relationship with an agency partner is really important. And the more interested that the agency is in your success as a client of theirs, then the less likely they are to get up in arms about asking for transparency. Now, I'm a big fan of like a kind of collaborative partner model in working with clients. So I'm not suggesting that you should go out and hire agencies, hire partners with this sort of like police state, like gotcha mentality. This is building these things into your processes are it's really about accountability and transparency that you want. One, you want to know when you create a campaign brief, you sign off on that campaign brief, you're buying what you said you were going to buy. Your agency is buying what they said they were going to buy. If mistakes were made, it's just like, okay, this was like we said this was a US campaign, but 25% of our impressions were in Canada and 13% were in Tuvalu and 12% were in the Republic of Kiribati. Why, right? Like we just like it's not like I want to go fire my agency because they made a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes from time to time. It's more about accountability and that transparency, right? So the big thing is like we like to say you can't improve what you can't measure. Our colleague Sunil likes to say that often and he gets quoted on it. And I know he got it from somewhere. I don't know where, but you can't, and I would just add the caveat in paid media is you can't measure what you can't see, right? So like in order to understand if something is a mistake, if it's fraud, right? Is it a did the platform make an error, right? Does Google owe you money? Does the Trade Desk owe you money, right? Was there an actual mistake in how something was run in the technology you're using, right? You need to be able to see how were the campaigns configured, how were the insertion orders configured, the line items, what targeting was in place, what impressions were actually served. You need to have the layer, as Augustine Fu points out, right? The verification, third-party verification tools, they're kind of woefully skilled at like for impressions that they actually can measure, they're pretty good, but there's a heck of a lot of impression data that they're not even able to do the appropriate level of forensics on. So you have to be able to see that log level data. You have to be able to, if you want to apply a solution like Foo Analytics, so tagging to your media, to do your own kind of level of fraudulent analysis, you should have the right to do that. Build that into your contracts. It's again, it's not about having this sort of police state mentality. It's just to say, hey, I'm happy to pay you $100,000 next month because I think you can actually benefit me as a brand and generate sales. I'm expecting a return on that. In exchange, I also expect to be able to see the results in a way that I'm comfortable with, right? That's a fair value exchange. So part of your process needs to be putting in place procurement and operational mechanisms so that you have the same level of transparency into your in-house teams and the results that you provide as you do with your agency partners. For one thing, it makes it much more scalable and justifiable to utilize external partners when it's a value. And there's really no kind of surprises at the end of the day. And your entire, I mean, I just, again, it's your dollar. You're getting out your checkbook and saying, I want something valued from you. You should take the appropriate steps to make sure you're getting what you're buying. And it's not even a, I've worked in the agency side of things. I feel like most agencies are trying to serve their clients well. But again, like mistakes happen. There are business processes in place that clients are just unaware of, in many cases. And I think you owe it to yourself to just to know as much about what you're buying as possible, and to ensure that your internal teams and your external teams are getting as much of the crap out of the pipeline as possible.
So, I mean, I'm still a little bit confused. I'm not confused, but do we have someone within the company who can hold them accountable? Because I don't think that everyone should be able to help, like, be able to hold the agency that works with us accountable. And I believe management will need someone, will need a tool, will need a way to give them the sense of security, be it someone that works with them that reports on like what the agency is doing, or be it a tool that can tell if there is some fraud or something like this. So how would you say like a company should approach something like this? Like, do we have someone in-house? Do we rely on the goodwill of the
Excuse me.
comp, like the agency that we're gonna be record like working with? Do we like nurture like how do we nurture a culture like where you can be able to rely on your internal teams or rely on something that can eventually like could tell the process is right or not, could tell if there's fraud or not, could report on ROI? Because let's say for content and SEO, for example, we work with an agency, but there is also people who are like SEO oriented within the company who can report on if the numbers match, if there is something that is not right. But this is like my case. That's
Sure.
on other content, like other marketing, other
Yeah.
con like marketing area. But ads, definitely ads is tricky, to be honest. Like, what's your take on this?
I mean, I guess I'll give you two, or I'll give you kind of three or four different examples or ways I would approach it. So I'll just take. Because I don't think it's just media centric. So I'll just like let's look at let's look at our own company, right? So for example, if I write a blog post, if I say Dawood, I'll volunteer to write a blog post. And if I take if it's a long blog post, I might take like 6 or 8 hours. I might research it, I'll write it. It's pretty well written. I have an English degree, like I can write okay, right? But I'll send you a draft. If nobody else puts their eyes on it and it just gets published, then there's going to be errors in it, right? No matter what. Like I won't catch every typo, or the writing could be better, the piece of grammar could be fixed, I'll have typos, right? Like there's just things I won't catch, right? And I'll send it to you. If our engineering team, if they create an implementation and they published that implementation live for Google Analytics. And if the same if we don't have a different person do quality assurance on what was implemented, then the person who implemented it, there'll be a mistake in it, right? Like almost assuredly, it might be a very minor one, but there will probably if somebody other than the person who did the work didn't review it, there will be a mistake, right? I mean, likely. If we run a paid media campaign, run an email campaign, whatever, and again, the person who creates the campaign, there's no external validation of that. There will be things we would wish we had set differently or had written the call to action differently, more optimally, maybe take advantage of a testing feature we didn't, right? There'll be something that could have been better. So in all cases, you kind of need a referee, right? For really almost any business process that hasn't been refined enough to get to be automated, right? Like fully. And even when you've automated it fully, you still need ongoing monitoring, right? But so yes. So the short answer is like yes, you can't rely on the goodwill of your agency, just like you can't rely on like if I did, but you also can't rely on my if I tell you I'm going to run a campaign internally, like nobody should rely on my goodwill either. It's not because the agency isn't trying to drive success. It's not because I'm not trying to drive success. It's because we have information available to assess whether or not what we did was successful. So that's why the transparency piece is important. So yeah, if you're a company that's big enough to want to work with an agency, you should still have people internally who are driving the business objectives, right? Who are driving the business decisions around those media dollars, right? You should not just be writing a check and handing it off to somebody and saying, use this on my behalf, right? You should be an active participant in that, both at the planning end and at the assessment end, which is why that transparency piece is important. This is the reason why I'm not a big fan of the media teams who are delivering the actual media execution being the ones reporting on the media performance. Of course, you know, at the campaign level, yes, right? The day-to-day campaign level, but you need somebody either from a data science approach or even just from a kind of one step up and you know, media analytics approach is you need to be looking at it holistically as well. And so those individual kind of like channel performance metrics, they should get a bit diluted. I don't want to say discredited, that's not what I mean, but they shouldn't be the driving metric of marketing success, whether it's your internal teams or your agency teams. So in all cases, you need a referee.
Just like football, you know, you always need a referee.
That's right.
Okay, so I would say my last question would be within the whole media programmatic buying, there is always a way to, you know, be cheeky cheeky. Then different platforms like Google Ads run differently than Facebook Ads, differently than whatever other programmatic like platform that you're gonna be running with. I would say we've already answered this, but does the person who's gonna be like overseeing or like the referee, does he have to be knowledgeable on all of these things, or like because it might get expensive, like having someone who knows like this, this, and this, and this, like, can be a little bit more on the unpractical side.
Well, they're certainly going to
Like,
cost you.
what do you think? What do you
Well,
think about
they're going
this?
to earn less than your CEO earns, but they'll, but yeah, they're not going to come cheaply either. They'll, yeah, an experienced media person won't come cheaply, but that's okay. I mean, they're going to bring value as well. But yeah, you don't, so you don't necessarily need to know all the technical ins and outs of, right, every potential paid media channel, although you should have some hands-on expertise, I believe. That's my opinion. It's not, it doesn't have to be in the, you know, taken as gospel. But you should understand, let's say, the relative strengths and weaknesses of different advertising formats, channels, like what kinds of success outcomes do different channels drive? Like, what are the appropriate metrics to assess, say, CTV, you know, YouTube? Like, how should you be assessing Facebook shopping ads that, you know, maybe are really, really targeted to first party audiences? You know, how should we be assessing TikTok? How, right? You should have an idea of, you know, benchmarks and reasonable kind of ranges of performance expectations, the kinds of targeting and creative avenues that are available to you in these different platforms. But you definitely don't need to be able to execute campaigns across every potential channel, I think, in order to be that sort of strategic, you know, media analytics and kind of referee role. I don't think so. That, not in my experience. Very few people are experts across all of that. Most people tend to have areas that they've focused on and developed some expertise in, and then they have knowledge, you know, certainly competency and working knowledge of other channels as well. But in my experience, you don't need, that person doesn't need to have, you know, this sort of unicorn-like expertise by any means. Does that answer your question?
It does, yes, it does.
Just
I
like,
mean,
yeah, right, if you folk, yeah, I mean, just like somebody who focuses on SEO, like really high value content writing for SEO purposes, they over time they also start to understand other aspects of how content performs and doesn't perform, right? How does it resonate with actual, you know, living, breathing human beings? How does it serve the business objectives it's designed for and things, right? You're not, like, very few successful SEO experts are just, you know, sort of like spinning their wheels around algorithms all day long, right?
So I guess that's it. We're gonna be ending the episode here, but I'll give a couple of how do you not foreshadowing a couple of upcoming episodes. So we'll have one on mobile, which will have ads and fraud and like the whole mobile marketing kind of shenanigans on its own with all of the regulations coming. So we have this one coming soon, hopefully. Should be out in a couple of weeks. I will not go give me any more details. I just like give people some insights about this. We're gonna be having a couple of more also podcast episodes. Of course, guests. Words started running from my head. So we're gonna be having more guests also within hopefully the more digital analytics and CRO spheres of like the whole digital landscape, because it, as I see it, digital maturity and overall analytics touches every single one of these, like CRO. My God, Google Analytics 4 have like give the like it gave them a run for their money. A run, I know, because like we have a like a partner agency who works in CRO. Hopefully, we're gonna be interviewing their CEO, and my God, it's caused them so much headache, as it caused so much headache for anyone else within this within digital. We're going to be also
Yes.
having someone from hopefully one of our like partner tools, and we're going to be having more exciting episodes. So I want to take this bit and just tell people, just I want to know what people want to ask for when it comes to digital marketing, mobile marketing specific CRO, and also in specific and anything related to data in customer engagement, because these things we have talked about, but we're going to be having also some experts on them. So, do you have anything else to ask about?
I don't think so. Yeah, I think we rambled on enough, and I think we talked about a few important issues that people should think about.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think the next episode will have some pillar stuff, though I not confirmed, not confirmed.
Let's
But
talk
I'll
about
definitely see
pillars.
and
Yeah.
yeah, foundationals. Oh, I love that
That was good. That
episode.
was most fun. Yeah, that was really fun.
Yes. All right, I'll see you next week.
Okay, sounds good.
That's good.
Bye-bye. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Digital Disruption Podcast. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the world of digital transformation and gained valuable insights to help navigate the ever-changing landscape. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us on our website, esense.com, or connect with us on social media. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting discussions on the forefront of digital innovation. Remember, the future is now, and it's time to embrace the power of transformation. Thanks for listening.